You're listening to Game Play with Matthew Cause on TSN 1050. Embrace the odds.
I want winners.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the second hour of Game Play. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. You are listening to TSN 1050, but I bet you were aware of that. And, of course, the show brought to you by FanDuel, but on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. And what we're doing is we're going to be, over the next couple of weeks, trying to get in as many different team previews in the NHL and division previews as hockey is upon us. The Leafs beat Montreal 5-1. I didn't watch a second of the game, but I knew Nick Robertson played well. But we're not doing the Jays. We are going over, the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're going to the Edmonton Oilers, and join us now, Daniel Nugent Bowman, who covers the team for The Athletic, joins the show. Daniel, really appreciate it. Thanks for joining the show today.
You're very welcome. I wish I had the luxury of not being able to watch preseason games, too.
That's your job, though. Like, that's part. Yeah. That's why you get paid all that money, is to watch the preseason hockey. I myself was watching the Jays on the Monday Nighter. But let's start here. Is there anything, it's a dumb sort of question, but is there anything more you can ask of Connor McDavid, who not only leads the league in points, but usually there's a gap between him and number two. Is there anything more that can be asked of him?
I don't think so, but I think he'll try to figure something else out to kind of make it his own problem to get better, right? Like that's his MO. Very obviously driven and wants to get better, wants his team to get better. But if you're looking for something specifically, he's been in the league now. This will be his eighth season, and he's never scored 50 goals. Now, he would have come very close in the 56-game season, and he's on a 48-goal pace the year he went absolutely crazy and had 105 points. But has never kind of broken that half-century mark. And, he's the type of guy that I think pretty much can do anything he kind of sets his mind to on the ice. But so that would be something I would kind of look for him to do this year. I mean, it won't come at the expense of not setting up teammates, whether it be Leon Draisaitl on the power play or Evander Kane at even strength at 5-on-5. But your point, though, Matt, is well taken in the sense that if you look at the playoffs, McDavid, and I'll obviously throw Leon Draisaitl, who is battling a high ankle sprain, into this mix as well. I mean, they had basically 2 points a game or a little above in the playoffs, and were the reasons why the Oilers went as far as they did. And I think this group has slowly been built to be a better team around them over the last couple of years, especially last year, now going into this year. But there's no question it's McDavid and then to a slightly lesser extent Leon Draisaitl that are the most important cogs in this machine that is trying to capitalize on a championship window before their contracts expire in the next 3 and 4 years.
Well, hopefully by then the salary cap will go up by $1 million to help teams like that. We won't get into that yelling match, which mostly just me yelling at myself about. So last year, Edmonton has had 104 points. Last time they had more than that, Wayne Gretzky was a member of the team. When you look at the current roster, is this team as good as last year's team, better or worse? And again, this is on paper. It's it's talent. It's and the answer now might be different in a month or two from now, but with the season upon us.
I mean, the only tangible player that they really lost was Duncan Keith, and for him making too much, having too high of a cap hit at his age and his performance level. For being a second pair defenseman, he was fine. He was a good second pairing defenseman. So to that extent, it is a loss. But I think they can withstand Keith's departure, where you have they're kind of backfilling from within with Brett Kulak, who was brought in at the trade deadline, and then they have a bunch of young guys on the left side. Philip Roberg, they just signed early in September, signed Ryan Murray. They have a couple other prospects, Dmitry Samarukov and Marcus Niemelainen. So I think they're set there. I think it's the best top nine that they've had in the Connor McDavid era, and they should get, I would think, you know, more stable, consistent goaltending from the tandem of Jack Campbell, former Maple Leaf, and Stuart Skinner, with obviously Campbell playing about, you know, 65-70% of those games. But, you know, it's the first time that they've had a true number one since kind of the second last year of Cam Talbot being here. So it's been, you know, 4 years of really having without the Oilers really having a true number one goaltender. So when you add all that up with you know, I think a lot of emerging young players, Ryan McLeod seems prime to take the next step, Kyler Yamamoto, Evan Bouchard, and certainly the talk of training camp is Dylan Holloway, who was their first round pick in 2020 and has battled injuries the last little while. Certainly seems primed to play in a top nine role. That's what he'd have to play in order to make this team. They don't want him on the fourth line kind of playing a few minutes a night. If that's the case, he'll go back to Bakersfield in the American League. But, you know, certainly I think this team is better. With, you know, having the crux of the team, or the core of the team back, and almost the entire team back from the one that reached the Western Conference Final. And then you add the growth of younger players that I'm talking about, and certainly the goaltender and Jack Campbell as well. They should be better than they were last year, and I would expect them to surpass 104 points.
Now, I know this, I'm going to make this sound like I watched it, but I just looked it up. But I wanted to ask you about Jack Campbell. You know, Campbell, 28 saves in that 7-2 win over the Canucks, the game that I totally watched. Wink.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, just what is Jack Campbell? How's he fit in? How's he looked since the moment you first were able to get your eyes on him?
Well, he's fitting really well off the ice. He certainly is a guy that has a reputation of being, you know, a beloved teammate wherever he's gone in his career. You know, really happy-go-lucky, always a smile on his face. He's come in. Really gotten to know a lot of the players, especially coming in and getting to know his goaltending partner, Stuart Skinner, very well. For what it's worth, you know, the Oilers might have the two nicest guys in net in the entire league, and those two, that doesn't always translate into wins, but it's certainly, you know, nice to go into the dressing room and talk to those guys. But he's certainly, you know, forged a good relationship with Skinner. You know, I talked about Holloway. Holloway gave up his number 36 to give to Campbell, which he had no sentimental value towards. He was just, that was a number that was given to him. But Campbell decided he would, you know, treat him to dinner and started ordering all sorts of food for him and for Holloway, that is. And, you know, he's really a guy that teammates love. And, you know, on the ice, I think the jury is still out in the sense that he's only played two games. The Oilers have really brought him along slowly. They played two home games, and the first one last week, he only played the first half of it. So last night was his first real go at it. You know, he was fine. You know, again, preseason, and they played basically the Abbotsford Canucks. I don't think too many hockey fans would know a lot of names on that list they played last night, which is a little surprising given that we're in the second week of the regular or the preseason schedule. But he's going to get at least one more start, and I would expect it to be his stiffest competition yet with the most NHL caliber lineup that he'll have faced to date. In whatever, if he starts one or two of the last two preseason games that the Oilers have. But again, I think he's primed here to do well. I think the Oilers really just need good, you know, consistent, solid goaltending. They don't need a Vezina caliber winner here. They just need somebody to make a few big saves and play steady, because this team has one of the best power plays in the league. It has for the last 3 years, and can certainly outscore a lot of the stakes you know, that they make at the other end of the ice. So the offense isn't a problem. They just need somebody to keep the puck out at a better rate than they have in the past.
I'll be honest. I was hoping part of you would say, nah, you know, Jack Campbell's been a real jerk, has been miserable with his teammates, says he misses Toronto, the fans, and his players. That would have made me feel better hearing that answer. Is like, hey.
I couldn't lie to you.
That's fine. I don't mind. I mean, it's like, hey, how's my ex-girlfriend doing? Oh, she's great. Better than ever. Real glow. Never seen her smile so much. You mentioned Dylan Holloway, the 14th overall pick in the, I think, the 2014 draft. And I'm wondering, for just people out there, 2020, excuse me.
2020, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, 2020. He'd be far older now if he was drafted in 2014. But just from like a fantasy perspective or in sports perspective, what does the, what are the, would you say, are the right expectations for a guy who could end up on a line with a pretty good center?
Yeah, it's hard to really answer that because we don't know exactly what he's going to be or where he's going to fit in. And you mentioned, so last night he had the opportunity to play with Leon Draisaitl and Zach Hyman. And I mean, again, against a very watered down Canucks team, he was the best player on the ice. He had a hat trick and an assist. He has the ability, the hockey sense, the skating, the shot, pretty much everything to be able to play on that line, on a scoring line. Now he's 21 years old. He's had some dips in terms of gameplay because of injuries. You know, basically what happened was they thought was a pretty innocuous crash into the boards in his second last college game a couple of years ago, and it wrecked the, or broke the scaphoid bone, which is a small bone in his left hand that kind of connects the base of the thumb to the wrist. Had surgery and he got some bad advice in terms of being told he could just kind of resume everyday life and lift weights and shoot and stuff, and it didn't heal properly. He had to have a second surgery on it, and that cost him basically 10 months of hockey time. And then he had a pretty good half year there in the American League last year, and they were ready to call him up. The Oilers were in April, and he got hurt again. So really, he would have been almost certainly would have been a regular NHLer by now had he not had these injuries. And he's kind of making up for lost time here. And again, they want him on a top three line. But if he doesn't play with, say, somebody like Draisaitl and Hyman, he'll be on a if he is to stay in Edmonton, he'll play on a kind of more two-way line with a very young center in Ryan McLeod, who again is on the rise, but certainly not anywhere near the offensive player that Leon Draisaitl is. So, you know, if he's with Draisaitl and Hyman, I think he can kind of get in the, 35, 40, 45 kind of point range, because he won't get up much power play time. And it's kind of what maybe Kyler Yamamoto has done in the past in terms of, offensive production. If he's not with those guys and is able to kind of, he can check and he can penalty kill and he can do all sorts of things. So he could fit in on that type of third line, but that you'd probably have that production, roughly halved in the 20 range. But he'd be a very intriguing guy if you're looking from a fantasy perspective to get with maybe your last pick or something like that. But I certainly wouldn't want to go too crazy and pick him too early just on the off or the potential of him playing with Leon Draisaitl.
Now, you're right. It kind of reminds me of a sort of similar situation with Nick Robertson here in Toronto. Daniel, really appreciate Daniel Nugent Bowman. Read his work in The Athletic, covering the Edmonton Oilers. All the best, and enjoy what should be a wildly entertaining season for all of you over there.
You're very welcome, Matt. Anytime, and pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Right back at you. That is Daniel Nugent Bowman. All right, on the other side, we get into the Monday night game, including broadcasters broadcasting a streaker the way God intended. That's coming up right after traffic. So Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo own the Los Angeles Rams. 7 straight wins over them. San Fran beats L.A. 24-9 in a game where San Fran was a point-and-a-half favorite at home. All of us took the Rams. All of us wondered, how the hell could San Fran be favored? And now we all look like fools. Part of this game was the 49ers had so many big plays. Justin Wilson, 32-yard touchdown run. The Deebo Samuel, 57-yard catch and run. There was Garoppolo had some deep passes to his fullback of 35 yards. Another one is Samuel for 29. And then the interception return that made it 24-9 was a 52-yarder. The Rams had too many field goals. They had their 3 field goals. The 3 drives that led to those 9 points covered 40 plays, 183 yards, and, like 23 minutes of time. And the Rams' offense was bad. They didn't have one play of 20 yards or more. They averaged 3.6 yards per play. Stafford got sacked 7 times. And, we saw the interception return touchdown, but there was a lot of other passes that could have been picked off. And as for Jimmy Garoppolo, he got lucky. Like he both got lucky and he was fairly good. Like he hit some tight window throws, but that touchdown to Samuel, the 57-yarder, that was the rookie Kendrick going for the interception, barely missing it. And then Debo's open field running, including making Jalen Ramsey miss. But maybe the thing we're all talking about in that Monday night game was the streaker, some guy running on the field, not even nude. Shame on you, sir. And Bobby Wagner makes the tackle. Let's hear. And here's the best part. The most interesting part for me is, you know, when you're watching a game and there's a streaker, they never show you on TV. They're like, we're not going to show you this person because we don't want to give energy to it for others and all that kind of BS. All we want to do is see it. So on the Manny cast last night, they actually showed it. It was great. Here's Peyton and Eli Manning commentating on the streaker.
There he is. Nice. Yes.
Oh, yes.
That's what we're talking
Wagner.
About. Wagner.
Bobby.
A veteran, right? Get him down. Now get out and
tackle.
Let these guys take over.
Oh,
Bobby Wagner. Veteran play.
He had some smoke going on there.
Yeah, he's got a t-shirt on. I mean, he's promoting something.
Yeah. Amateur hour there. If you're on a streak, you got to go full throttle and go nude, right? I mean, what is this?
Absolutely. You got to go full nude. But, Nick, I just appreciated, like, Eli and Peyton were going, come on, just show it to us. And the producers decided, all right, here's some live action of the streaker. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so many, I guess, conversations being had about this streaker, about why he did what he did. Apparently, he had a pink flare. I'll be honest, I didn't see it. I was working the Leaf game, so I did not see the streaker. But apparently, he had a pink flare because it was baby announcement. That's what I've been hearing.
Is it a gender reveal?
I think it was a gender reveal.
Oh, my
that's
God.
That's what I've been hearing, which is, if that's true, it's like, no, don't, no, that's too much.
I don't know.
You're going to jail for that.
I know. Part of me kind of respects that. We'll play later the Kevin Harlan call. I want streakers protesting things that no one would ever think about protesting.
Gender reveals.
No. I want protesters saying, like, free Daniel Snyder or... You know, leave Mark Zuckerberg alone. Like, I want things, like, when you think of someone protesting, it's usually, you know, someone very, if for a cause, usually the environment or against some giant company. I want the other side. I want people protesting pro-billionaire charities that raise money for children that only have four horses when they could use five horses, one for every day of the week. That's the kind of protesting I want to see, because it'd be different.
Yeah, it would definitely be different. And we've seen some very interesting protests. Since I have been your producer, Matt, think about the protest we have seen. We have seen someone chain themselves to a soccer goal post.
Yep.
We have seen someone glue their wrist to a basketball court.
Yep.
And we've seen someone put their right arm on fire.
They did, yes. And as far
we've
like
we've seen some very interesting protests in less than a year.
Yeah, as far like private jets, protesting those, protesting some animal rights groups as well. Yeah, and now, God, we got to find out if that's a streaker. I don't know. Part of me kind of likes that. At least you're going all out. It's better than inviting 50 friends to your house on a Sunday so you can watch them whack a pinata just so suddenly blue gum can fall to the ground. You want to do a gender reveal, you got to earn it.
Yeah. Well, I've just been advised it was an animal rights activist yesterday.
That's not nearly as much fun. All right, here's Peyton and Eli discussing the best way to tackle a streaker.
How would you tackle a streaker? You think you go high or you go low?
Well, I mean,
depending on what he's wearing.
Like I said, that guy was a half streaker. You know, that guy had all his clothes on. You know, there you just take him wherever, right? If he's totally naked, there's certain places you can't take him.
Right. Yeah. You just kick him.
Yeah, you don't wrap up a naked guy. You go straight over the shoulder. All right, enough about the streaker.
I like Eli going, you just kick him. Can we now get Eli on the field having to tackle a streaker? I want to see his technique. A reminder to everyone that tomorrow's classic Lotto 649 jackpot is an estimated $5 million, and the gold ball jackpot is an estimated $22 million. Text 649 in your name to 105050 for your chance to win $100 in Lotto 649 tickets with Encore. Standard message rates apply to all entries. Lotto 649, find your possible. Coming up, we looked at Edmonton. Now we're going to be looking at the Calgary Flames. Well, Sports Center reporter covers the Flames and the Stampeders. Salim Valji will be joining us right after traffic. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. And I just realized something. The Calgary Flames kind of remind me of the soap opera NBA team. And maybe like the Lakers. And I'll explain in a second. But we're doing our best to go through as many of the most important teams, Canadian teams and divisions, previewing them, getting you set for the start of the NHL season. And now we did Edmonton earlier. We're going to continue with Alberta, with Calgary. And is Salim Velji, SportsCenter reporter, covering all things Flames and Stampeders. And no, we will not get to what the Argonauts offense did last week against Calgary. That game was ugly. Salim, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Yeah, of course, Matthew. Happy to be on.
Appreciate it. This is the comparison, that the Flames, their off season might be more interesting than the regular season. Like, now that everything that you covered this off season, they won the off season in the NHL. What's more exciting, the Flames' past off season or the upcoming regular season?
That's a good way of putting it. There's probably drama that's going to come up during the regular season with losing streaks or if they start off a little bit slow. But you're right. It was Shakespearean this off season. You know, you go from a couple of what might be considered betrayals to the team finding some new loves, I suppose you could, if Shakespearean terms.
Yes.
It was fascinating. And, the NHL needs more of this. It needs more drama and juiciness. Like, even the Tkachuk sign-and-trade, which was the first ever in league history, apparently. The NHL needs that, you know? The NBA constantly takes over Twitter with players demanding trades and whatnot, and the NHL could use a little bit of that. So I know it sucked for Flames fans for a few days there when it looked like the world was crashing, but I actually think it's really good for the league to have these types of off-seasons unfold and a little more player empowerment and just the drama of it, you know?
So, yeah, I think so. You're in agreement. The offseason, more interesting. No, I'm just kidding. So, but by the way, what I love about your reference there, then in this case, then Hamlet is the Calgary Flames. Let's do this again. Calgary is Claudius, Hamlet's dad, who gets murdered. and then Hamlet's mother is the Flame. Who's John? Okay, now I got to go back and look at all my Coles notes for.
I always tell students I got a D in my first university English course, so I had to retake it. So I'm probably not the most knowledgeable about Shakespeare, but that all checked out. So
I like the betrayal. Unfortunately, with a lot of the times in these tragedies, in the end, spoiler alert, everyone dies. How good can this first line be? If you have Huberto, who, you know, according to Daryl Sutter, is the greatest passer in the history of Flames history, but you throw him out there with Toffoli and Lindholm, how good can this top line be?
Well, Matthew, I think that's a really interesting difference from last season, because Gaudreau, Lindholm, Tkachuk were together basically from game one. They were together for the final few games of that 2021 season as well. But I think this is going to be a moving lineup for the Flames. I don't think you'll see nearly the same consistency at forward in terms of lines that we saw last season. So right now they've got Huberto with Lindholm and Toffoli, but I don't know how long that'll last. They haven't quite found their game yet in the preseason. Like, looking at last night, Dubé, Mangiapane, and Kadri, they looked like they'd been playing together for a long time. Like, they looked so relentless on the forecheck and just no-look passes in the offensive zone. But you haven't quite had that yet with Calgary's top line. So I think there'll be some moving parts and moving pieces. You know, they do have that very big top nine role that's currently gone unfulfilled. And Sonny Milano hasn't been great in his PTO. And Jacob Peltier didn't quite grab a hold of that spot either. So I think that complicates things a little bit. But in terms of Calgary's top line, I don't think it'll be as consistent a unit as people were used to seeing with Calgary's top line last year. So it might take a few games or a few weeks for everything to sort itself out, but it's got potential. Huberto's the probably the best playmaker in the sport right now. And Lindholm is so reliable defensively. It's just finding that third, that winger on the right side that can complement those two.
Yeah, it's almost like you're talking about the Maple Leafs second line trying to find that one winger. I think just what stood out for everyone is I'm not used to Daryl Sutter throwing around compliments like this, and especially, I'm not going to call it hyperbole because that would be insulting to Huberto, who's been incredible, especially last year. But when Sutter says he's probably the best passer that this team has ever had, and maybe ever, like, it's just, you kind of stop for a second when you hear that specific quote from that specific coach.
For sure, Matthew. And I think it's a way of him, the coach, sort of saying this is a new group. We're forgetting about the past by saying, you know what, we've got such a great playmaker that we were able to sign. Like, I think it was a little bit of a veiled shot at Gaudreau on that, but also just this is our group and we're proud of it type of thing. And he's been complimentary of other players as well. He's not, you know, Huberto is not the only one. He went out of his way to say that Nikita Zadorov has had a really strong camp, and Zadorov is someone that's pushing, that sort of found his identity as a player, and it took him a few years, but he's pushing for more special teams time and a bigger role on the back end. And Dylan Dubé is another player that has earned the coach's praise. Just Sutter said that he trusts Dylan Dubé, and it's one thing for Sutter to compliment Huberto, but Dubé's still fairly young too, so he's, you know, maybe he's Sutter's feeling the good weather, the extended summer we've had in Calgary, but he's certainly been positive early on this season. So,
last year, Calgary finished with 50 wins and 111 points as they won the Pacific. Your expectations for the team this year, similar, like within a point or two, better or worse than last year?
I think they'll be about the same. A little bit of a drop off during the regular season is what I would predict, just because there are these moving parts and it's going to take a little bit of time to figure out who plays where. And I don't know if early on in the season I'll translate into as many wins as people are expecting, but I think this is a group that might start slow and might not. Like, they got off to an incredible start last season, and I don't think they'll necessarily be bad to start the season this year, but the wins just might not be as frequent. So I think they'll get better as the season goes on. I predict a slight drop-off in points in the regular season, but during the playoffs, this is a group that has maybe the deepest center depth in the National Hockey League. They have an incredible blue line from spots one through five, potentially one through six. I think Michael Stone's eventually going to sign here and just add to that depth. But I think there'll be a slight drop-off, and then in the playoffs you're going to see the group really gel, and they'll have found that chemistry. And when you have, you know, Backlund as your third line center, that's very tough to argue with, especially with Lindholm and Kadri as one and two. So it'll be a slow start, but they'll round into form, I think, by the time the season comes to an end.
More likely to happen, Calgary goes to the Stanley Cup, or the Stampeders trade Bo Levi Mitchell to the Argonauts?
Oh, Bo Levi to the Argonauts. I think it's clear with Jake Mayer signing an extension that pays him starters money that it's his team to lose. I think Bo's future is sort of spoken for now, right? And I think Bo, you know, Saskatchewan would be the other team that I would think would ante up for Bo, but I look at Bo and see a guy that maybe wants a future on our side of the business after he's done in media, and he might, to me, recognize that Toronto as a city has a little bit more value to offer than, say, Regina. And even if the Rough Riders come calling with a little bit more money, I think Bo, because he's got varied interests and he's got plans for after his career that maybe he sees more value in Toronto than he does in Regina. And so that would be my logical landing spot for him is Toronto. It looks like McLeod Bethel-Thompson just has maybe hit his ceiling as a quarterback in the CFL. And they do have a good team around him, but you saw how Calgary's defense just throttled him a few days ago. So I think the odds are high that Bo eventually makes his way to your neck of the woods.
That is that is fine by me, but also McLeod Bethel-Thompson is such an easy guy to root for the production. Yeah. Certainly hasn't been there for him to be
very likable.
Truly sort of, yeah, incredibly likable. So I'm really appreciate. You can check him out on SportsCenter all the time. Reporter covering all things Flames and Stampeders. You'll see his works at TSN.ca as well. Really appreciate. Thanks for taking time and yammering a little bit about the Calgary Flames. And I'm gonna figure out just exactly who is who in this Hamlet scenario. Is Kadri Laertes? I have questions I need answers for.
I want those answers, Matthew, so I'll be refreshing your Twitter page constantly until I get them. So
done and done. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care. It is Salom Velji covers the Flames and the Stamps for TSN. All right, I should mention to everyone, and this is only for the 400 or whoever is left, whoever is left in the Survivor Pool, the first up Survivor Pool, make sure to go to TSN1050.ca. Remember, get your picks in. You don't get them in, you lose. You get a pick wrong, you are eliminated. Last person standing will score a free set of Rodex tires along with install at your local Cal Tire, as well as $2,500 cash. Plus, we're randomly giving away three more sets of tires to lucky winners throughout the NFL season. TSN1050's first up football Survivor Pool, sponsored by Rodex, an exclusive Cal Tire brand. Coming up on the other side, sound of the day, we'll hear Kevin Harlan and his call of the streaker from last night's Monday Nighter. We'll do that right after traffic. I think I'll wait till tomorrow to really dive into what's ever going on with Tom Brady and his wife Gisele Bündchen, because it's a private story. And the reports at first coming down from the New York Post that Brady and Gisele have hired divorce lawyers. And we have no idea what's going on. But, I mean, when he took all that time off during training camp, those 11 days off, there was reports from CNN that were saying that Brady and Bündchen were living separately. And when you hear it from TMZ and New York Post and CNN, and there's a lot of reporting going on about these two. And first thought is, they got two kids together, Benjamin and Vivian, and, you know, you hope they're doing okay. And in some ways I'm not shocked, because you've got two people that are going to be very headstrong, very alpha, and one of them sacrificed her career for years and years for Brady, and we thought he was going to retire, and he came back. And, again, this is all speculation, so you don't want to dig too deep into someone's personal lives and the dirty laundry, but none of this is at all a shock when you consider the sort of lifestyle that Brady lives to try to be as great as he has been year in and year out. All right, we do this at the end of each and every show. It is time now for Sound of the Day.
Sound of the Day, Sound of the Day. Here comes the Sound of the Day.
And for Sound of the Day, we go to Kevin Harlan, who is calling the 49ers' easy win. They pushed around the Rams. Their win over the Los Angeles Rams. But here is Kevin Harlan calling play-by-play of the streaker.
And here comes a stoppage in play because someone has run on the field with a smoke bomb that is pink, and he's running up the sideline. Now a couple of Rams come over there and make the tackle. Head first into the player who has taken the field, and he's in a cloud of pink smoke, so you can't see him. And now on him are a couple of security guards. That guy is headed to the slammer, and it will not be a good night.
I think that is the right call. I just, in the end, hope it was worth it for this individual. That was a pretty good hit by Bobby Wagner. I always wonder about this, Nick. How much do football players just revel in that chance to knock over the streaker?
I mean, when they're actually streaking, probably not as much as yesterday when the guy was fully clothed, as Eli
right.
Payton so eloquently put it in their breakdown of the events.
Yeah. Now, you were whispering during the commercial break, you had some thoughts on, we were talking briefly about the idea of eventually Bo Levi Mitchell.
Yes.
Would he find his way to Toronto, a la the way Ricky Ray did many, many years ago? And you had some thoughts on a guy that we love, McLeod, Bethel Thompson.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious, Matt. You say McLeod has not had the success here in Toronto, right? You guys both mentioned that, you and Solom.
Yeah.
He's second in the league in passing yards with a game in hand on the first place leader, and he's only eight yards back. So I always laughed at it. Everyone's like, oh, he's had such an awful time in Toronto. He doesn't have a whole lot. And then you look at his stats. It's like, no, he's been pretty good. But not he's great. Been, not going to win you a bunch of great cups, but he's been pretty good.
Yes, that's what he has been. He has been pretty good. And by the way, being pretty good in any professional league is a hell of an accomplishment. But he's rarely that guy that you feel like he can put a team on his back and win you some big games. And by the way, there's most quarterbacks can't do that. You know, Zach Collaros can. But Collaros has got so much talent around him in Winnipeg. It's just with McLeod, Bethel, Thompson, the production will always be there, but there'll always be the interceptions. He is tied with the league lead in interceptions with Nick Arbuckle. And we saw in the playoffs not able to generate touchdowns in the loss to Hamilton last year. Like, McLeod, Bethel, Thompson, if he is your backup, oh my God, are you set. If he's your starter, he will win you games. The question is, can he get you over the top? And that's all, and it's a tough measuring stick to use for any quarterback, and I get that it's not always totally fair. Overdrive is coming up next. Hayes, McLennan, and Jeff O'Neill. Gameplay on TSN 1050 is brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more. Get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. I'm Matthew Cause. You have been listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Time now for traffic.